Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, featuring programs from radio's golden years. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. In this hour, True History, later on from Vox Pop from 1945. But first, another Man on the Street program. In some aspects, it's Welcome Travelers, broadcast out of WMAQ in Chicago on April 12th, 1953.
This is Tommy Bartlett saying, wherever you are, welcome to Welcome Travelers. Transcribed from the College Inn Porterhouse of the Hotel Sherman in Chicago, the new Blue Cheer and new Spick and Span present Welcome Travelers, the program that brings you actual stories, amusing, inspiring, unforgettable, of people just like you. Now Tommy Bartlett meets our first guest, who is Ronald McPherson of Napanee, Ontario.
Well, hi, Ronald.
Hi, Tommy.
This man grew up in a city of almost 500,000 people. All of his life he'd heard and read about the joys of small-town living. He decided to make his home in a small town. If you're listening to us in your home in a small town, feel free to criticize his story. Now, if you're listening to us from your big city apartment, also feel free to criticize his story. Because you can't criticize him. The way he tells it is the way he lives it.
Well, thank you, Ken Nordine. And now, Ronald, you moved to the small town from the big city. Why did you do this?
Well, Tommy, I felt that the people in the city didn't really live, they just existed. I felt they spent so much time just moving around that they had hardly time to do the things they really wanted to do. So after I graduated, I went to see the dean of the College of Optometry in Toronto and asked him if he would suggest a small town where I might open a practice. He suggested a town of Napanee, Ontario, about 4,000 people, and I very eagerly went down there and opened an office.
And what did you hope to find in the small town?
Well, I hope to find the contentment and happiness of an unhurried existence, Tommy.
Well, now, what did you find?
Well, I was a little disillusioned at first. I found that I began to resent some of the things that typify a small town. The prying into my affairs, the gossip, the what are you doing, where are you going atmosphere.
Do you have a specific instance of intrusion on your privacy, Ronald?
Well, Tommy, one time I went into a local liquor store to see the manager about renting his summer cottage. And that afternoon, a lady came into my office and said to me, I saw you coming out of the liquor store this afternoon, and I would suggest that if you want to make a success in this small town, that you not be seen in such places.
And here you were in there to rent a cottage.
That's right, sir.
How about another example, Ronnie?
Well, I was single at the time, Tommy, and I went to a party with a young lady whose name was Mary. A few days later, I asked another young lady if she would go with me to a hockey game, and she said she'd like to go very much, but she couldn't because I had been out with Mary.
Well, Ronald, what is it that changed your attitude towards small towns, finally?
Well, Tommy, I got in the Army. I was going to go back to the city, but I got in the Army. And while I was in the Army, I got to thinking a lot. And I realized that the prying into my private affairs was really a genuine interest in me. You see, in small towns, they don't have the diversions that they do in the cities. And therefore, the people turn to interest in one another. And when I realized this, my resentment turned to admiration.
And what happened when you got out of the service, Mac?
Well, I went right back to Napanee and I married the assistant tax collector.
You did?
I did. We have a family now, and I think a small town's a great place to bring up a family.
Dividends.
Dividends, right, Tommy. And, Tommy, I'm very proud to be a part of that community and of the wonderful people that live there and the warm friendships that they give you only in a small town.
How do you feel about raising a family in the small town?
Well, I think we have some more time to spend with their family. I know a story a city friend of mine told me that when her husband came home on the weekend, she would say to them, children, this is your father. You must have heard me speak of him many times.
You're with your family constantly, aren't
yes,
you?
Yes, I am, Tommy.
I was just thinking how strange it must be that the realization of a dream often brings disillusionment before it brings happiness. But isn't that the way almost everything is?
Well, Tommy, Mr. McPherson said he wanted nothing for himself, but we do want him to give these gifts to his wife. A Miromatic electric percolator. The Miromatic percolator is completely automatic. Also, she'll be able to prepare delicious foods with this Dormeyer Frywell, the automatic electric deep fryer.
That brand, I nearly bought one.
And I'm sure your wife will be pleased with these two bottles of Ciro's perfume, Ciro's Acclaim and New Horizons.
Oh, that's grand.
And your wife will also like this package of the new Blue Cheer, Procter & Gamble's exciting new wash day discovery. It gives the cleanest, whitest wash possible.
And I think you should have these as a remembrance of your visit to Welcome Travelers. Cheney Jewelry, cufflinks, combination money clip and tie clasp with tiny Canadian Navy compasses set in gold and silver by Guglielmo Cheney, the master craftsman. And we'd like you and your wife to have dinner this evening as our special guests at the famed Shangri-La restaurant.
Oh, we'd love to. Thank you very much, Tommy.
You're welcome. Very welcome indeed.
Now, Tommy, it's time to meet our next guests, a Mrs. Marion Thomas of Salt Lake City, Utah.
Hello, Mrs. Thomas.
Good morning, Tommy.
Have you ever felt that your marriage and your family duties isolate you from the world? It really is a rather common feeling and has nothing to do with your duty or your love of family life. It's just a feeling that you can't help expressing because you're an individual. And as an individual, you are the owner of something called an ego. So you have the ego on one hand, love of family and duty on the other. Tommy, that's what this story is about.
Well, let's find out about the story, Ken. Mrs. Thomas, does your story start before or after your marriage?
Oh, it starts before. I thought things ended when you got married.
How did you feel about children coming into the family?
That was pretty much the end of everything then. You were stuck at home.
Well, what happened after your marriage, Marion?
I found out how wrong I was. I discovered that living was just beginning with marriage. You didn't have to be single or married and a career wife to go on living.
Well, why were you so concerned about getting married in the first place, then?
Well, I think probably because my mother and father had what I considered an ideal relationship. He was a college president for 30 years, and she helped him in all the ways an intelligent woman can help any man in his profession. And I thought I couldn't duplicate that, and I wouldn't settle for less. So I went on and went to school and got a degree in social work and music, and then went to New York, and the New York Public Library did children's work with storytelling and the various things that go under the guise of librarianship. And after that, I was on a dean of women's staff at the University of Washington when war was declared, and that made me decide to go in the Red Cross. And I was a recreation director attached to the Navy on the West Coast.
What kind of work did you do then?
Everything, all kinds of things, many of which I couldn't do. I found myself teaching from crocheting and weaving and doing hand skills, which I had no experience with, to teaching piano to paraplegics.
Well, good for you, Marion. Didn't you think of marriage at all at this time?
Oh, of course I did. But I didn't think I was going to get what I wanted, so I thought I'd have to settle for no marriage at all. But when I was 28, I met a young doctor who with a, I think, a brilliant mind, an inquiring mind, and we were married.
And have been happily married ever since.
Yes, but I didn't get married with that Cinderella myth in mind that you got married and settled down and lived happily ever afterwards. I found out it was just the beginning.
Well, when did you know that everything was going to be all right, that getting married wasn't a jail sentence for the lady in the house?
I think I really knew it when our children came. We have four, Christy 8, Gloria 5.5, little Danny's just over 2, and 3 weeks ago we had our second boy.
What's his name?
His name's Danny. His name's Matthew. He's new, you see. We don't know him very well.
Well, where's Matthew today?
Matthew's at home in Salt Lake. Yeah. I'm missing him.
Of course you are, and I bet he's missing Mother, too. How do you feel about young children generally, Marion?
Well, I had had no use for dolls when I was little, and so I thought I wouldn't like little babies, especially the little wiggly size, but I found out how wrong I was. You know, they're born smarter than we are, and from then on, it's a race to keep anywhere near even with them. As a matter of fact, I would like to tell you about little Matthew. He, just 3 weeks ago, we had a very exciting experience with him when he was born because we decided to do it the natural childbirth way with very little drugs and staying completely conscious. And so I saw him before he ever even breathed or anything, and it was extremely exciting.
I can imagine that would be a thrilling experience you'll never forget. Are there any other experiences that you found a challenge and, as you say, exciting, Marion?
Well, they're happening all the time, but right now we're in the middle of building our own house with our own hands. 2 summers ago, I drove 10,000 nails myself in the roof of the house, part of the time with my little 6-month-old Danny in a playpen beside me.
Up on the roof?
On the roof. It's a flat roof. But building this house was a real learning experience, and it just pointed out my theory that you always go on learning as long as you keep alive and want to.
Well, Tommy, we've been thinking about some gifts for Mrs. Thomas's wonderful children, ranging in age from 2 weeks to 8 years. Now, for the baby boy who was born just 2 weeks ago, a complete layout of Wilson's infant wear, sacks, shirts, gowns, and kimonos, and a large assortment of Plaky toys, including the Plaky jump-up gym and rings. Well, the older children will have great fun on this universal Jim Dandy all-steel play gym, complete with the Jim Dandy sky scooter, two-place jumping swing, gym rings, and trapeze bars.
How wonderful.
Yes, the Jim Dandy is approved by Parents Magazine. Here, too, is a big box of new Spick and Span, America's famous once-over cleaner.
And the children are going to benefit from this throughout their school years, we hope. It's the Encyclopedia Americana.
How marvelous. We'd love to have it.
Now, these 30 volumes of authoritative reference information contain over 10,000 photographs, drawings, and maps. And the Encyclopedia Americana is endorsed by leading educators. And cooking for your family will be a pleasure on this Super 60 Tappan gas range. I know that you'll appreciate Tappan's exclusive... You're excited.
Oh, my word.
I know that you'll appreciate Tappan's exclusive time-saving features, and the Tappan range will give you cooking and baking at its best. And before you leave Chicago, we'd like you to have luncheon at Elmo Linton's Club St. Elmo.
I'm overwhelmed. I really am.
Well, nice to have you with us, Marion Thomas, from Salt Lake City, Utah.
Attention! Welcome, travelers, bus for Midway Airport. TWA Transworld Airline Constellation, 300 miles an hour for San Francisco. Board.
Well, Tommy, it's time now to meet Miss Alice Mulligan of New York City.
Hello, Alice.
Hello, Tommy.
Well, chances are, if you could see this young lady, you'd know her face because it's been in many, many magazines. In the magazine, she was probably advertising a fancy hairdo, an elegant hat, or a stunning necklace. She models only items that can be worn about the neck or on her head. But the most important thing she wears is courage. You see, she's the only model in the country who works from a wheelchair.
Well, now, Alice Mulligan, I wonder if you'd tell us what put you in the wheelchair in the first place.
Well, about 5 years ago, I was stricken with multiple sclerosis. And it was at that time that I just started modeling.
Well, multiple sclerosis is a very serious illness. How did it affect you?
Oh, I was almost completely paralyzed. And at that time, my family doctor took an interest in my case, and he was working with me for quite a long time, and he had me almost, well, I felt as if I were almost well again. But, of course, unfortunately, he died, and I knew my legs weren't strong enough to hold me, and I couldn't really walk on them. So I realized I had to be confined to a wheelchair. And, golly, when that happened, I just felt real awful, and it took me a while before I was able to go out into the streets again, but when I did, I even felt the feeling that I just wanted the ground to swallow me. It was pretty hard to take.
Well, we sympathize with you, Alice. We can imagine just how you felt. What decided you on going out into the world once again?
Well, my mother was sick, and my Aunt Margaret had to go to work for us, so I realized that, well, golly, there must be something I can do to sort of earn some sort of a living toward helping out in the family home. So it was then that I started to think that maybe I could make connections, that I would be able to get some sort of a job.
How did you get started on the road back?
Well, fortunately, Bellevue Hospital Rehabilitation Service in New York accepted me, and I stayed there for about 9 months. And your program there consists of going on mat classes and exercising of the legs and physical therapy and all sorts of things that go on like that, both mentally and physically. And, of course, they teach you to work on braces and crutches. And fortunately, I was able to get pretty good at them. Then I can do almost a block now. Of course, I have a long way to go yet, but at least I feel as if it's nice to be standing up talking to people instead of having to look up at them all the time.
I do wish our listeners could see this charming, lovely, beautiful face that we are having the pleasure of watching with a great deal of pleasure today. How did you finally get back to modeling, Alice, where you belong?
Well, down at Bellevue, an x-ray technician took some photos of me, and they were sent out to different agencies through the staff of Bellevue. And one agency was interested in me, and they took me, and before you knew it, I was getting calls for catalog work where they used the live face, and they either sketch in the dress or the suit that's ever going to be used, and then started on jewelry and hats. And then all of a sudden, I realized I was right back where I had started from. But this time, I knew I had courage I didn't even know I had. And then all of a sudden, well, I just guess I got to live with what I, you know, I realized I had to live with what I had. And I guess there's a lot of women like that in the world.
Alice, what magazines and advertising matter has your face appeared in?
Well, I've been in Sears Roebuck and Montgomery Ward, and just recently I was in Glamour magazine.
Isn't that fine? Well, Alice, you've proved an old but always exciting realization that the answer to problems is so often within a person himself. In this case, herself.
Tommy, Alice's sister is traveling with her, and I think we should have a gift for her.
Right.
And I'm quite sure she'll be pleased with this Nardis of Dallas ensemble, including blouses, skirts, and a suit styled in Nardis of Dallas new spring fabric. And Alice will be sending you a Nardis of Dallas ensemble, too. And Alice, to keep your hair more radiantly alive, here are two tubes of the new Prel shampoo. Also for each of you, a Samsonite ladies' wardrobe case in Samsonite's new saddle tan. Alice, we know you can use this in your work. A huge basket, and it's filled with Primrose House cosmetics in Primrose House latest fashion tones. And here is a smart, fashion-right, hand-tailored, completely fitted Evans handbag. Among the fittings is the new Evans automatic lighter.
And as a special remembrance of your visit to Welcome Travelers, we'd like you to have this attractive, dependable Whitnor watch. A distinguished member of the Longines Whitnor family of truly fine watches. And we're also going to send a Longines Whitnor watch to your aunt, who's helped you and mother so very much. And Alice, you'll enjoy many hours of listening pleasure with this VM Triomatic portable phonograph.
Oh, thank you.
Now, it's in an attractive, lightweight case. The VM Triomatic phonograph features the long-lasting Jensen Diamond stylus, and it plays 33, 45, 78 RPM records. And before you leave Chicago, Alice, we'd like you and your sister to have luncheon in the beautiful college and porterhouse of the Hotel Sherman. And then around noon, we're going to put you aboard a TWA, Transworld Airlines, 300-mile-an-hour Constellation. You'll be at LaGuardia Field in New York in just 2 hours plus 45 minutes.
Oh, I thank you all with all my heart.
Well, you're very welcome, Alice Mulligan from New York City.
A woman who is happy to accept responsibilities that aren't really hers. Time to meet Mrs. Chester Wright and Patsy Ann of Jamaica, New York.
Well, hello, Mrs. Wright.
Hi, Tommy.
Hi, Patsy Ann.
Hi, Tommy.
It isn't difficult to find a need for love and understanding. Unless the case involves personal responsibility, many are willing to extend sympathy and little else. Mrs. Chester Wright found a baby that needed a home. Although the little girl was not a relative of hers, Mrs. Wright raised the child. She's now making a home for that foster daughter's little girl, her foster granddaughter.
Well, Mrs. Wright, did you have any children of your own originally?
I had one daughter.
One daughter? Well, then how did you happen to take another little girl into your home?
Well, I raised my sister's daughter for a while, and when she got old enough to talk, she decided to take her while we were lonely. And we found another little child to take her place, and we raised her till she got married.
And what happened to that foster daughter?
Well, her and her husband separated when her baby was 3 months old. And then I took her over when she was 6 months old, and I've had her ever since.
Well, who's that?
Patsy.
Oh, the little girl here is the daughter of the original foster child in your house.
That's right.
Uh-huh. Well, Patsy Ann, how old are you, dear?
I'm 11.
And how long have you lived with your foster grandparents?
Since I was 6 months old.
And why are you in Chicago now, dear?
To try to locate my father and see my mother.
Well, where does Daddy live?
I'm not sure, but he's somewhere in Chicago.
You don't have his address?
No.
Well, when did you last see Daddy?
Last year, for about a half hour.
And why haven't you seen Daddy since?
Because I don't know where he's at.
Well, have both your father and your mother married again?
Yes.
And they have more children now?
My mother has none, but my father has two.
Well, Patsy Ann, how do you feel about your foster grandmother and your foster grandfather, who have raised you in the absence of your mother and your father.
Gee, I just think they're wonderful, besides teaching me dancing and piano.
And what have you done to try to find Daddy?
Well, just about everything, I guess. I drew my money out of the bank to try to come here and find him.
Well, you don't have your father's address, and he doesn't know you're in Chicago. You know, Patsy Ann, there's just a chance that Daddy might be listening to WMAQ, our NBC station in Chicago, right now. And if you knew that Daddy was listening somewhere in the room here, what would you say to him?
I'd say, Daddy, please get in touch with me. I love you so much and miss you.
And can you tell Daddy where you're staying, if he was here?
Yes, I'm staying at a friend's here in Chicago.
Well, if Daddy was here, too, I'd suggest to him that he get in touch with lovely little Patsy Ann, this beautiful little blue-eyed, blonde-haired girl in care of Welcome Travelers at the Hotel Sherman, because we know exactly where Patsy Ann is staying. Patsy Ann, I'm sure that your father will find you if he heard what you just said. And Mrs. Wright, I know how proud you must be of little Patsy Ann, the brave little girl, and how much you love her and everything, but why did you accept the responsibility of taking care of her, a foster child, after taking care of her mother, also a foster child?
To accept a responsibility that you don't have to accept, you receive a lot of love and devotion in return. And we love her very much. And to lose her would break our heart.
Of course it would.
Mrs. Wright, we certainly admire you for the affection and help you've given Patsy, and we'd like you to have some remembrances of your visit with us today. First of all, three lovely Kay Whitney Reliance frocks. They're styled by the French designer Valerie Gallenbert. Now, to compliment your dresses, this beautiful set of Phyllis jewelry, necklaces, and earrings to match. And for your home, this new Douglas Kitchen Master-style trophy chrome dinette set with Goodall Burl plastic upholstery on the chairs and matching burl on the Douglas tabletop. Mrs. Wright, here is a giant-sized bottle of Joy, Procter & Gamble's sensational new liquid suds maker for dishes and fine fabrics. And Patsy, we have some gifts for you, too. For casual wear, two pairs of Magic Slacks by Heidi Hyde. They feature the adjustable waistband and leg length. Also, two Pandora nylon sweaters. And for dress-up occasions, two lovely Mary Jane party dresses.
Oh, thank you.
And Patsy, to complete your wardrobe, two pairs of London League shoes made by Kikorino.
That's wonderful.
And you'll be able to take lots of pictures of your trip with this Argus 40 twin-lens camera, complete with flash unit and carrying case. The Argus 40 twin-lens camera is as easy to use as a box camera. And little bird told me that you have a doll collection, but I'll bet you don't have a doll that cries real tears. So
no.
We want you to have this Tiny Tears doll, complete with doll's wardrobe and traveling case. The Tiny Tears doll will make a perfect addition to your collection of dolls. And Patsy, we understand that this is your birthday. Is that right?
Yes.
Well, Patsy, it's a happy birthday celebration for you in the famed Well of the Sea of the Hotel Sherman. It's a beautiful restaurant in Chicago. And here is a special birthday present for you, the streamlined, fully equipped Schwinn bicycle.
Oh, thank you.
The Schwinn bicycle will be guaranteed just as long as you own it, and it has a Schwinn built-in fender light, and it's a real beauty, isn't it?
Yes, it sure is.
It's almost as pretty as you are.
Oh, you're fooling.
Now, this is Ken Lordine inviting you to visit Welcome Travelers, transcribed in Chicago Monday through Friday. For tickets, write to Welcome Travelers, National Broadcasting Company, Chicago 54, Illinois. A woman who traced down twins missing 32 years and united them with the father they thought was dead tells her story tomorrow on Welcome Travelers.
And now this is Tommy Bartlett saying goodbye for the program that brings you stories of people just like you. Welcome Travelers.
Welcome Travelers. On Tuned to Yesterday, a relatively rare broadcast that has survived from radio's past, heard on WMAQ on April 12, 1953. This is an hour of true history on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Livonier. Now time for Vox Pop, broadcast from Hollywood in this episode, telling the interesting story and part of the Armed Forces Radio Service, which at the time featured big-name stars on programs like Mail Call and Command Performance, not heard in the United States, but for the men and women serving overseas to hear the program, especially during the Second World War, which had nearly officially ended just days before this broadcast on August 14, 1945, known as VJ Day. This episode of Vox Pop was first broadcast on August 20, 1945, on CBS.
All aboard! travels America to bring you the voice of the people. Thanks to the makers of... Tonight, Bromo Seltzer's Vox Pop train travels to Hollywood, California, dropping in on the Armed Forces Radio Service, which sends the world's finest radio programs to the world's finest fighting men overseas over the world's largest radio network. And here are your two Vox Poppers, Parks Johnson and Warren Hull. Come in, Hollywood.
This is Parks Johnson.
And this is Warren Hull. And here's something you've never heard before unless you've been overseas in uniform. Listen.
Presenting this week and every week, the stars as requested by you, the men and women of the armed forces. Bing Crosby, Dinah Shore, Bob Hope, Loretta Young, Lyle Barrymore, Rita Hayworth, Jose Turby, Ginger Rogers, Danny Kaye, Johnny Mercer, Betty Davis, Jimmy Durante, Jinx Falkenberg, Cary Grant.
Yes, all of those Hollywood... All of those Hollywood stars were on one command performance program. Just one of the great programs sent to our men overseas.
And Parks, all of those stars, and one more, our special guest tonight, the world's most popular radio personality. Guess who it is?
You've got me guessing, Warren. No, you haven't either. But our first Vox Popper comes. All right, folks, here he is. By the way, we still want to say that we're with our men who fought overseas. We've been with you on these programs for over 5 years now, and we're going to be with you from now on whenever you want us. And here's our first Vox Popper, who went overseas in the year 1942 as an Air Force sergeant. He came back as a first lieutenant. In between, he did a little bit of invading in North Africa and a bit of invading in Italy. But most important, he fought for and built the Army's first mobile radio station. Folks, we want you to meet him from Clinton, Iowa. Tall, good-looking, and single, Lieutenant Vern Costensen.
Thanks for our wishes.
Vern, I hear you organized an outfit in Italy that was called the Drips. Is that right?
Well, the outfit itself wasn't called Drips, but we organized the Old Oaken Bucket, which had an Old Oaken Bucket brigade with about, 10,000 drips.
That isn't as bad, then, as it sounds, is it?
Not exactly. We had some pretty fancy drips.
Yes?
Yeah.
Who, for instance?
Well, we had General Eisenhower, who was a drip. General Clark, who was a drip.
Yeah.
And our own...
Imagine that, a vice lieutenant saying things like that up there.
Well, my present boss, Colonel Tom Lewis, is a drip.
All kidding aside, I bet it was a...
I take that back.
I bet it was a swell organization.
Yes, it was.
Yeah. Now, that mobile radio station, that came, of course, after many months when you were overseas. There was a big need for it, was there?
There was a great need. We found it out when we entered Italy and set up a fixed station in Naples. The Fifth Army moved on, and they wanted their armed forces radio service programs. And the only way we could give them to them is to move the station up. And the only way I could figure out to move that station up was to put it on wheels.
And you did, huh?
That's what we did.
Uh-huh. Well, how many hours a day are you on the air with?
We were on the air 18 hours a day, carrying a full broadcast schedule, just like a radio station in the United States.
Well, you were part of the Army network, wasn't you?
That's right.
Well, tell me, what kind of programs you put on? Live talent, recordings, and what all, for instance?
We carried all types of programs. We carried the excellent Armed Forces Radio Service shows, their own productions, as well as the decommercialized shows, which the sponsors and the hundreds of stars and unions and so forth presented.
Mm-hmm.
We also carried our own record show. We had a record selection of over 5,000. We carried our own live shows, utilizing all the USO talent that came over.
In other words, you probably had as much or better than we had over here. Sounds like to me.
Well, I kind of think we did, yeah.
Say, wasn't it your radio outfit that almost caused a flapjack batter shortage over there in Italy, Vern?
Yes, that was quite an incident. During our early morning program, a fellow wrote in for a request and also stated that he could make the best flapjacks in the Army.
Yeah.
We announced it over the air, and immediately we started receiving letters that everybody else could make just as good flapjacks. So we told them the only way we could tell was to test. And this one particular mess sergeant had flapjacks every other morning at his outfit, and we also had flapjacks every other morning.
Ah.
But he would bring them around to us.
Method in that madness, huh?
Flapjacks, coffee, syrup, everything.
We do those things on radio occasionally, don't we, Vern, huh?
Yes, and get by with it.
They're
all right, don't we?
Pretty good flapjacks, too. You get a lot of fan mail, I know.
How many flapjacks do you get?
They're mine, oh boy. Not as many as you get. How about your fan mail? Pretty heavy?
We had a tremendous amount of fan mail. We were averaging about 2,500 letters a month over there.
Fellas telling you what they wanted and what they liked,
with one station.
Yeah. Say, did you get mixed up with Axis Sally any over there?
Why, Axis Sally caused us a great deal of trouble at one time. She kept on warning us at different times that the Air Force knew where we were located and were going to take out after us. Usually, we took it as a joke because nothing ever happened.
Did something happen?
This one particular time, she gave us the warning. We laughed it off as usual. However, that night, about, just as it was getting dark, the chief engineer heard a peculiar whistling sound. And shortly after that, heard a machine gun open up, and it was a German plane that had killed its motor and...
Coming on your beam, I'll bet, huh?
And strafed in on our beam.
But no harm?
No harm done, although a bomb dropped about 50 yards.
Then we could talk on and on and on, but
right.
We wanted the folks to meet the man who really fought for that first mobile station. You've got him, I know, all over the world now.
That's right.
So we're going to talk more about that as we go along through the program. But right now, from good old Bromocelsis, some things we hope you like and remember us by. First, we got a beautiful champion's tennis racket in a press and a half a dozen live tennis balls to go with it. Second, we've got... Bring it out here, Dave. Let me look at it. It's a radio, four speakers on the thing. It's a Philco. You can reach out and get them, and if you don't, it's a high fidelity trick. Can you use that, Vine?
Well, it's very appropriate for a radio man.
Very appropriate for a radio man. Thank you a lot, Lieutenant Vine Carson.
The Armed Forces Radio Service supplies its network stations with up to 12 hours of programs for every day in the week. And a short time ago, it shipped its millionth record. We want you to meet the first enlisted man to join the AFRS when it was organized here in December 1942. He's 34, from New York City, Master Sergeant Peter Witt. They tell us that you're in charge of the long-haired program.
Yeah, in spite of the lack of it.
No hair.
Baldy with the long hair.
Yeah. Well, what are your qualifications? Why did they assign you to those programs?
Well, I have spent most of my life in the world of music. I studied music all my life, and I've spent among the musicians, and I have also worked in show business for a long time.
Oh, really? Well, what were you doing before the war?
For the war, I used to produce radio shows and write radio shows in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to work in motion pictures.
Oh.
Out here in Hollywood and in New York and in Europe.
Well, you, when you came here to AFRS, you started in a pretty small way, didn't you?
Yeah, we started on a GI shoestring.
Yeah.
And we were all in one room, practically, and it was all pretty cramped, but we turned out the shows. And
well, you've come a long way.
Yes, a very long way.
Well, now tell us about your program, the one you work on.
Well, I work on the, as we say, long-haired stuff. Mostly I do a concert program, which is called Concert Hall, and it's a one-week, half-hour show in which we present the greatest artists in the world.
Who's on Concert Hall?
Well, we have, as a regular MC, we have Lionel Barrymore on the show, and he's a grand man to work with. He has never missed a show in over a year.
Good.
And I know it's great trouble for him sometimes to come, but he has made every show, and then we have the...
Who's conducted the orchestra?
A man you probably know from radio, Meredith Wilson.
Oh, he has.
Who used to be a major with us, and he is now a happy civilian.
Uh-huh. Well, anywhere Meredith...
I wish I were, too.
Anywhere Meredith is, I know he'd do a good, very good job. How about the orchestra? Are they GI?
Yeah, strictly. Strictly GI, and but only as far as the uniform goes, not as far as their work goes.
Yeah.
I think they're about the finest musicians you can find anywhere. And,
good. Do these great artists that you have on Concert Hall do great work on the recordings for the GIs?
The greatest. I don't think that any of them has ever troubled as much in his own private career about his work as they did when they worked for us. I mean, even the greatest people like Heifetz and Menuhin and Rubinstein and all these great music stars, they really have been working very hard.
For little things, would they do a recording over?
Oh, would they do a recording over? I can remind you of a story. I remember a story where one day I was recording with somebody and we were all through the show and he finally came back and he said that all through the concert he has been worrying about his first number. Could he play the first number over again? I think it was Rubinstein. And in spite of the fact that it had been passed and was wonderful, he insisted on doing it over again because these people felt that the very best was just about good enough for the fellows overseas.
Well, what was the matter with it?
Well, Rubinstein just, I think, made a slight mistake, but one day Menuhin was recording, and he recorded for us the morning after his Bowl concert, and he had played the night before in the Hollywood Bowl, and he started working for us at 9 o'clock in the morning, and Somehow we both felt, he and I felt, that the violin wasn't quite up to par and up to scratch. And so he couldn't find out what was the matter with it. And I said, yes, it didn't sound as usual. So he said, well, finally he caught on the idea and he said he thinks that his violin was tired.
Tired?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I didn't quite know what he meant by it. And he said, well, he had played the night before on the ball in this open air, and he has always two violins with him, so he just exchanged his violin and played the other violin, which made all the difference in the world.
That makes a difference.
Very great, you know. It's the violin is a living instrument, you know. It's like a woman. You have to treat her well. You have to play her in the good places. You can't just take a good violin player anywhere. And,
well, you could follow that analogy a long way, I know.
In moods. Yes.
Well, we want to thank you very much, Peter. Mm-hmm. And just want to state that we're all very glad that the fellows don't have to listen to your programs in foxholes anymore. But they do need them just as much while they're over there as millions of them will have to be. And, Peter, speaking of recordings, you'll receive one of this interview as a gift from us. And also, Bromel Seltzer has for you, and this will come in handy with your work, a 15-jewel chronograph. Now, that's sort of a combination watch, stopwatch, tachometer, weather forecaster, and whatnot. And now, wait a minute. Knowing that you have a furlough coming up and New York is your destination, here's a leg up on your trip. It'll get you a good part of the way. And so that you'll look the part, here's something to make you really long-haired. That's a very fine black wig. Thanks, Master Sergeant Peter West. I knew it looked good. Okay, folks.
Hawks Johnson back with the Armed Forces Radio Service Group. And, folks, there's an Armed Forces Radio Service program that soldiers and Marines in jungles, sailors on the seas, flyers in the air, and wounded in hospitals look forward to every day. It's called G.I. Jive. Now, G.I. Jive is a recorded musical program. And in between the musical numbers comes the voice of an American girl who just talks to the men. To some, she's one thing. To others, she's another. But to each one, she's home and the things and the life that he dreams about and loves. Now, just for a moment, we're going to switch to a studio and eavesdrop on whatever may be going on in a typical G.I. Jive program being recorded. Okay, Engineer Whitaker, give us the G.I. Jive studio.
This is G.I. Jill with G.I. Jive, ready to throw a tune or three on the beam. Tonight's show is dedicated to a certain unit at APO 726. It seems that at this moment, this unit is celebrating their third birthday with a big party, and they want me, mind you, to sing happy birthday. Oh, now, fellas, you know I can't sing. And about that other request, gosh, I don't see how it'll work, but never let it be said that G.I. Jill ever turned down a request. Okay, I'm ready if you are. Are they all lit? All right, here goes. Well, did I get all three of them? Oh, brother, let's get to the music. Here's a song for the man aboard the Little L, more formally known as the USS Lovering. It's the 1 o'clock jump.
Now, that's just a tiny sample of G.I. Jive, the most popular program. As I was saying, it's the most popular program on the world's largest network, the Armed Forces Radio Service. And that was Buddy Cole's group making the music in the background. And the girl, she's the most listened to person in radio today. In a few minutes, we're going to bring her out to our microphone here on the stage and introduce her to you so that you can chat with her. But right now, Warren, who's next?
Well, I just wanted to say that Command Performance, G.I. Journal, Mail Call, Jubilee are some more favorite programs of servicemen. And here's a man who works on them as a comedy writer. In the old days, he worked for Crosby, Bergen, Valley, and we were together on Jack Haley's program. He's 30, from Los Angeles, Seaman First Class Charles Isaacs of the Coast Guard. Charlie, it must be fun being a comedy writer.
No, it's not. Not at all.
What?
It really scrambles your brains, and when you're in service writing those shows, it makes powdered eggs out of your head.
Well, I was just wondering, can you make your wife laugh at breakfast?
Yes, but not anything I say. It's the way I look in the morning.
Oh, I see. Well, we're off to a good start. Say, what were you doing in the Coast Guard before coming to the Armed Forces Radio Service?
Well, after boot camp, I was transferred to public relations, and they finally got me down to writing spy recruiting announcements.
Mm-hmm.
You know, release a man to fight at sea.
Mm-hmm.
So I released myself and ended up on a ship.
Yeah, I can see from those service ribbons you've been overseas there. You've been on the receiving end of this radio business, haven't
yes,
you?
Yes, yes. Of course, when we were first out there, we heard nothing but Tokyo Rose up off New Guinea, Dutch New Guinea, and so
mm-hmm.
on. But after Hollandia was taken, they established an AFRS station there.
Mm-hmm.
From then on, it was G.I. Jill.
Ah, good. Well, I suppose Tokyo Rose operated a little differently than Jill, didn't she?
Yes, she did have a little music, but her chatter wasn't so well received. Up at Sansapor once, she told us that we had a bombing. And the next day, she said, how'd you boys like the visit last night? We'll be over again tonight, same time, same place. So they came back that night, but we got one, a twin-engine bomber.
Oh, good. What was your battle station, by the way?
Pointer on number one gun.
You didn't feel so funny, like gags, when you were looking at that barrel at a jet plane?
I thought that was one joke that would kill me.
How do you like it being back here at AFRS?
Well, it's swell. I like it over there very much. Worst you can get is an ulcer there.
Oh. Well, after being over on the other side, I can see that. Who? Tell us some of the other top comedy writers over there who are working for $60 a month.
Well, there's Bill Morrow of the Jack Benny Show, Mark Fisher from Jack Carson. They're both available now. They just got out today.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's Sherwood Schwartz, Jack Rose, Dick McKnight from Bob Hope Show, Dev Friedman from the Fanny Bryce Baby Snooks, Mac Benoff from Duffy's Tavern, and Al Lewis from Bob Benchley.
Well, that's a great bunch of writers, and it's quite a talent list that you've had on your programs over there, isn't it?
Oh, yes. We've had the cream.
Hmm.
And
how much would it cost a sponsor if you were going to pay for it all?
In the past year, if a sponsor had paid for all that talent, it would have cost him $16 million.
Well, that's a lot of money. I understand that all of those people have come over there and been glad to work for the GIs.
Oh, absolutely.
And you certainly brought the best to those who deserved it. And, Charlie, it's been fun to meet up with you again. And now, those very favorite words of mine, Bromo Seltzer has for you. So you can take your work home with you, or not, as the case may be. We have this big, barely portable record player.
Thank you very much.
Yes. Is that a big one? And that's not all. We have a complete set of most unusual golf clubs. They're McDonald Smith clubs. They're forged in Scotland, and they're all in a bag forged or fabricated in the United States.
Thank you very
Thanks
much.
Thanks very much, and good luck to your team of press pass, Charles Ivey. Okay, folks.
And 9 irons in that bag, Warren. Back with the Armed Forces Radio Service, the folks that put out the finest program for the finest folks in the world. And now, for that sweet, unaffected American girl, known to every man in every service as G.I. Jill. She has the largest audience of any radio personality, and that includes Hopes, Crosbys, Fibber McGee's and Mollers, and Fox Pop. I see her over there in the wings now, just back from the studio on which we eavesdropped while she was doing a little G.I. jive. Now, I'm going to try to describe her for you, for you servicemen who may be out there listening. She's about 5'3", and her hair, well, let's see, her eyes, Sergeant. Come here, Sergeant. I can't put it in G.I. language and describe G.I. Jill. Take a look over there and see what she looks like to you.
Fellas, it's something like out of this world. It's gorgeous. Something you dream, you laugh, you sing, you shout about. You just later, that's all.
Uh-oh, now, wait. Now, Sergeant, that's enough at the moment, Sergeant Bernard Hughes of Chicago. I want to hear you again. Because I think from that your G.I. buddies know just about how G.I. Jill looks. Here she is in person from Los Angeles, Miss Martha Wilkerson. Come on, Martha. Marty, did you hear all that business?
Well, I heard part of it. I want to hear that again later.
Well, we're going to give you a recording of that. Not that you don't know about recordings, but I'd like for you to hear that because, really, I think both the sergeant and I felt just about like we sounded on that. Tell me, you do love your program, don't you?
Oh, I certainly do.
Yeah?
Oh, I wouldn't want to do anything else.
A little closer to the mic.
Okay.
Do you happen to have anybody in the service?
Yes, I have a husband in the service, and I have two brothers in the service.
That sort of tells why you like this thing, don't you? How many programs a week you do?
Seven.
Seven?
Mm-hmm.
One each day, huh?
That's right.
G.I. Jill, 6 days a week, I understand. And what's that seventh one?
Well, that's Jill's all-time jukebox. That's the old great records of all time.
And you go to a lot of hospitals around?
Yes, I do. I've been out to Birmingham and Long Beach Naval. And...
Tell me, I'm interested. How about the boys when you go into a hospital who have heard you and who've never seen you? Isn't it rather interesting?
Well, yeah, it is.
Yeah? What did they say to you?
Well...
I know it varies.
Yes, it does.
Yeah. Give me some of it.
Well, it's like meeting an old friend, really, Parks. It is. They seem to know me. They say they feel that way about me.
Some of them have written you fan mail, too, haven't they, I'll bet.
Uh-huh.
So what do they write you about, Jill?
Oh, they write about everything, about what they want to do and about their folks.
Uh-huh.
And mostly about home.
Yes, home it is, isn't it?
It certainly is.
Tell me, confidentially, did you ever get any proposals in those letters?
Well, yes, but they're only in fun. For example, I'll tell you one. The other day I got a letter from, about six Marines, and it said, "Dear Jill, we love you. Will you marry us?"
Well, now, if you think about that, that really tells the story of how the fellows feel about G.I. Jill, who is to them everything that home and the things that they love. That's what she is. What are some of the things that, other things that you talked to the boys about? Of course, you were answering something there a while ago.
Well, you heard the birthday cake. Well, things like that. One boy, I recall, who always had the pleasure, as he put it, of mashing the potatoes at home of an evening.
Yeah.
So he said I sounded sort of like his wife, and she always used to call him. His name was Bing, by the way, and he asked me to say, "Bing, the mashed potatoes are ready."
And you
just
did,
like
huh?
his wife.
Whatever they want, you try to do, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
Arthur, you have given so many millions of men so much pleasure, and we wanted on Vox Pop for the folks back home to know just who it was when the fellows come back and say, "G.I. Jill, G.I. Jill," we wanted them to hear you. It's grand that you've taken time out to come be with us tonight. And now, from good old Bromo Seltzer, something that we think a young lady like you would like. You like to wear lovely clothes. You do wear lovely clothes. First of all, it's an outfit that'll look mighty swell when you wear it. It's a two-piece gray tweed suit with white pinstripes and a gray crepe blouse to match. And second, here's a sport outfit to go with it. It's a skirt, fuchsia, and it's, I don't know these names Dave has written down here. Anyway, a pair of lovely sweaters to go with it. We hope you enjoy well.
Oh, it's wonderful. Thank you
Thank you a lot, Martha
much.
Wilkerson, G.I. Jill. Well.
And now, bring Jill back. Now, Vox pops the question. We're all going to gather around this microphone. You know, we have people here concerned with different types of programs, and I want to ask them which they think are more popular. The serious programs, the long-haired, or the popular, the jive. Now, Lieutenant Carstensen, you ran a radio station over there. What would you say?
Well, I think the variety programs with plenty of popular, sweet music.
That's your opinion. How about you, Peter Witt? Which has the greater appeal, do you think?
Well, I think that after all that bang-bang in the field, they like a little bit soft and good music in the evening.
He's prejudiced.
They don't want bang-bang in music, huh? Well, Jill, I know you'd say it's popular anyway, because that's all your program is. It's popular music, isn't it?
Well, yes, but I think that sweet swing is good music, Peter.
Well, it's good to you.
Now, Sergeant Hughes, we know that you want to put in your 2 cents. Which do you think is the more popular?
I'll stick with Jill. Be your boyfriend always.
Well, by the way, Sergeant, do you think that Jill would be even more popular if they could see her?
I sure do.
Speak up
a
little bit.
She'd be the top.
She'd be the top.
She sure would.
You think it's time for television to come in now, huh?
Yeah, it sure is.
How about you, Charlie Isaac?
About the music?
Yeah.
As far as classics?
Yeah.
Well, some of the boys like classical, but most of them really like the stuff that'll melt the ice in Grandpa's plumbing.
Oh, they do. Well, Peter, you're in charge of the long hair department. Would you really like to do a jive program?
I would love it, but they wouldn't even let me hold the stopwatch on our jive show.
Oh, he's a square.
Oh, jiggly.
He's
jiggly
square. He's a square?
Oh, yes.
Well, I don't see why.
You mean that long hair should have a GI cut? Well, now, that really suggests something. I'd like to ask you what your secret ambition is. What would you like to be, Lieutenant Carstensen?
Well, I'd like to put radio programs out over a radio station that stands still when it's off of wheels.
Yes. Well, how about you, Peter? What would you like to do?
Well, I think eventually I would like to wind up in motion pictures and produce.
Why?
Well, there are lots of things that are good. Not the least is the paycheck, and I think it's a wonderful medium to work in.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
How about you,
radio,
Jill?
Too.
Oh, don't forget radio. How about you, Jill? Come on now, tell us, what would you really like to be?
Well, I like what I am. I like being Jill.
Well, you certainly... I know there are 5 million guys who wouldn't have you change for anything. Sergeant Hughes, now, what would you really like to be?
One of them 5 million that still want to stick with her.
You still want to stick with her, huh? Say, Charlie Isaacs, is there anything that you really... that's the secret ambition of yours?
Yes,
I mean, can you come out with it now?
I can.
Yeah.
I want to be a civilian.
Well, we could go on for days with this group, but I'm afraid time is up, isn't it, Parker?
Yeah, Warren, time's about up, and we appreciate Jill and Sergeant and all you fellows what you've had to say there. It's wonderful. It's time now to say goodbye to you of the Armed Forces Radio Service, because there's still a big job ahead of you. We know that. Millions of men overseas will be needing your grand programs for a long time to come, and we hope you'll be calling on Vox Pop whenever we can help.
Next week, Vox Pop takes you behind the scenes at Paramount Pictures. We're going to join Paramount in celebrating the third of a century birthday. And along with darling Diana Lynn will be that great traveling salesman, that man who has brought so much happiness to so many fighting men in so many parts of the world, Bob Hope.
Yeah, we're going to be glad to have Bob with us. And I know that you're going to have some fun next week, folks. So tell a neighbor to tune in on Vox Pop next Monday, won't you? Good night, folks.
So long, everybody.
Be sure to join Vox Pop, the show that travels America, next Monday night, same time, same station, when Parks and Warren visit the folks who make Paramount Pictures in Hollywood. Their special guests will be Diana Lynn and Bob Hope, just back from his latest trip overseas. But remember, next time an ordinary headache strikes, get three-way relief fast.
I did a three-way.
This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Vox Pop, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 20th of August, 1945 on CBS, bringing to a close this hour of true history on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Livonier. It's been a pleasure.